Welcome to Short Hops, powered by rotowire.com. Derek Van Riper here with Bernie Pleskov. Sadly, Bernie, I am back in Wisconsin. There's frost on the windshield in the morning now. It is definitely not Phoenix in November for me.
What's frost?
Yeah, exactly. What is frost?
I'm sorry, Derek. I'm sorry. That wasn't nice. I'll tell you what. We are having the greatest weather right now. It's just incredible. And I always feel guilty. And, you know, it lasts about a third of a second. So I don't feel guilty anymore.
We all get to choose. But, yeah, frost is the stuff that makes corn more expensive when it ruins the corn crop. So just that's one way to define frost. Arizona Fall League wrapping up this week. Championship game coming up this weekend. I got to see 7 games in 6 days while visiting with you last week. That's probably a record for me. 7 games in 6 days is quite a bit of baseball. And believe me, if I could have crammed in 2 or 3 more games, I would have found a way to do it. But at this point, Bernie, let's talk about the hitters of the Fall League, and most specifically, the best hitter that you've seen in the Fall League. I had a very limited window being there for about a week. You've been watching this league since the beginning of October. So who is the best hitter that you've seen in the Fall League this year?
Well, you know, I think there are several pure hitters there, but the guy that comes to mind, and we talked about Jesse Winker last week, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on him today. He's with the Reds. He's an outfielder, and I think he could be up by as late as the end of 2016 because they need him. The other guy that I think really is showing me, there's a lot of guys, but Hunter Renfroe, this guy is just on fire. And if there's a club that needs power, it is the San Diego Padres. And Padres fans have got to be excited about what Hunter Renfroe is doing. He's just hitting everything that's coming his way, breaking balls, fastballs, hitting to the gaps. You saw him, right, DVR?
Saw him hit that home run coming off the bench in the Fall Stars game. And Winker and Renfroe were 1 and 2 on my list. I didn't rank the players. I had a group of 20 players who I thought were the best that I'd seen. It wasn't the 20 best prospects in the Fall League because guys like Byron Buxton, Addison Russell, they're not there. I didn't get to see them at this later stage in the Fall League season. But Renfroe was really high on my list. And I think part of the issue with a player like Renfroe, and this is something we talked about briefly while I was in Arizona, is that for someone who doesn't get to see a lot of prospects, you tend to evaluate players too much within the context of the organization that they play for. And what I mean by that, in the case of a Padres hitting prospect, from a fantasy standpoint, you're immediately turned off because Petco is a difficult place to hit. But once you watch Hunter Renfroe play, you realize he's a right-handed hitter as opposed to a left-handed hitter, and you see that power on display, you see that swing, you see his ability to hit the ball to all fields, you become a lot more excited. And this is a guy who was a first-round pick, so he wasn't a complete secret or a bargain necessarily in the draft. He had a very accomplished college career. I believe he played at Mississippi State. But he looks like maybe the best hitter that I saw because I didn't get to see as much Jesse Winker as you did. He didn't play in the Fall Stars game, so you saw him for a few weeks. I think he's since returned from the calf injury or whatever it was that kept him from playing last Saturday. So Renfroe is definitely high up on my list, and I think it was between Renfroe, Aaron Judge, I think, was really high up for me. I saw him hit a couple of home runs. I mean, this is a guy, Aaron Judge, 6'7", first-round pick of the Yankees a few years back, probably going to need another full season of minor league development before we even consider him for the Bronx, but I think he could stay in right field. Mammoth guy, 6'7", looks like Jimmy Graham in a baseball uniform.
Yeah, I agree with you about Judge's power. There's no doubt about it. The only question is, how many swings and misses are there in there? And there will be some. Whenever you've got a guy that big, and we were talking the other day upstairs in the press box about how many big guys there really were in baseball. You know, you go all the way back to Frank Howard with the old Washington Senators, that type of mammoth player. And, you know, they really do have some swing and miss in them. But, boy, when they connect, this guy has awesome power and a tremendous, accurate throwing arm from right field. I'm very impressed with him.
Yeah, he doesn't move as slowly as you'd expect for a player who's 6'7". He's not a burner by any stretch of the imagination, but he can actually, I think, handle right field pretty capably, especially with the arm strength that you mentioned. mean, so I guess if I'm trying to pick the best hitter I saw, it's probably Winker based on what I know about him more than what I could see in one game. But Renfro definitely surprised me as much as anybody that I saw, and it moved up considerably in terms of my keeper rankings. I would say a couple other guys that stood out. Roman Quinn, I mean, a switch-hitting outfielder for the Phillies, lots of speed. This is a guy that missed some time with, I believe, a ruptured Achilles a couple years back, so his minor league development has been slowed by some injuries. But he switch hits, he has speed to burn. I mean, we're talking, what, would you give him 3.84 seconds to first base from home plate, I think? That's
what I had him at, yeah, 3.84. And he followed that up with a 3.87, so he's consistent.
Yeah, it's real blazing speed. I mean, this is a guy that I think if you look year by year at his stats, you don't see a ton of steals. But if you look at the games played count, you realize he hasn't been playing full minor league season. So assuming that durability is not an issue for him, I can see him stealing 50 or 60 bases with relative ease here in 2015.
Well, the question is, can he get on base? And that's the question we had with Hamilton. And that's the question we'll have with a lot of those Jackrabbit-type guys like Gore of Kansas City. You know, can they get on base? Can they sustain on their own without coming in and being a pinch runner? But the game is going to allow for these pinch runners. I think that's going to happen. You might use the 25th man on your roster to do just that. But Quinn has some pop. He hit a home run yesterday out of the leadoff role, either yesterday or the day before. Derek, they're all, you know, blending into each other now. But Quinn, out of the leadoff role, hit a home run, and it was to left field. When he puts the bat on the ball, he's got some pop. I don't want to see him doing that. I want to see him put the ball on the ground and bunt and do a short game. But then again, once that home run happens, it really scares me because now a guy says, hey, I can do this. Lengthens his swing, and there we go. But let's see what happens with him. I think he's disciplined enough, and he knows his game, not to go up there trying to hit home runs.
Yeah, mental makeup would be key here. Roman Quinn had 7 home runs in 88 games in the Florida State League this year, so you're right. He's not just that speedster who completely lacks power. And Billy Hamilton hit more home runs than people expected. I think he finished with 6 this season, and almost all of them came against Milwaukee. So I got to see a lot of Billy Hamilton's home runs this year. But, you know, I'm looking at Quinn as this prospect who he's good. He's probably going to be a good center fielder because of his speed, maybe even a great one, depending on how he adjusts. He used to be a shortstop, but if you could say that about half the prospects in baseball, everyone used to be a shortstop as long
Billy as Hamilton. Billy Hamilton.
Same exact same case. But if Quinn can add, you know, plus defense, the burning speed, maybe he ends up being a guy that long-term ends up leading off for the Phillies and creates that top-of-the-order threat that they really haven't had for a few seasons.
See, they desperately need that. They need the injection of youth. You know, Rollins did a great job for them at the top of the order. Let's not discount that. But those guys are getting a bit older, and now you have a guy who, and they don't have a deep farm system. So if you have a guy like Quinn, who's he's not close yet for me. He's a year away at least, if not more. But once he makes it to the big club, that changes, you know, the dynamic. That turns the page for the Phillies. It helps a tremendous amount. Let me talk about another guy or two here that I think people will really get to know. And one of them is Brandon Nimmo, the outfielder for the Mets, who just continues to hit. He really does have a very good hit tool. Whether it's going to be with power or not is yet to come. But this is a guy that's going to get a batting average out of himself because he knows how to hit. Did you see Nimmo? I can't remember. Yeah, I think you did.
I think I saw him 2 or 3 times. He looked pretty good. I think my issue with Nimmo is that I don't see him as a star-level player. He looks like a guy that's going to do everything well and not have a glaring weakness, but I don't know if he's much more than that. You know, like at a 20 to 80 scale, he's a solid 50, which is useful. It's good. You want to have 50s. But for a first-round pick, I always look for that next-level ability, and I just don't know if I saw anything that stood out to me that led me to believe there was more projection than that for Brandon Nimmo.
There isn't really that much. That's a good point. I don't know that he projects to see, and that we'll see much more than this. But see, again, this is a club-specific guy. If you look at the Mets and you look at their outfield, he's ready. You know, he can play. He can play equal to most of the guys they have there now. So if you were looking at another club with him, he'd have a tough time breaking in. But for the Mets, I think he's a perfect fit. And that's not to say, and we're going to talk a little bit later about Michael Kadire, that's not to say the Mets are a bad ball club. They just have some needs, and Nemo may meet one of those. Defensively, I've seen him make some not stellar plays, so I think that needs work. But offensively, I think he can help.
I would agree with that. I mean, showed a very good eye at AA, 12.9% walk rate as a 21-year-old for Brandon Nimmo. So a guy that I think does fit well in the organization. But again, for a fantasy standpoint, when I'm looking at prospects, it's totally different than a real-life player evaluation standpoint. You still go through the same process, but you have to look at categories and say, what can this guy do for my team that other guys can't? And I think Nimmo has a lot more real-life value than fantasy value in the long term. But one guy that I really like, who I didn't get a chance to see much down the stretch because he played in the big leagues, was Dalton Pompey. I thought Dalton Pompey looked really good. Colby Rasmus is a free agent now. Melky Cabrera, also a free agent. So the Jays have a couple of holes in their outfield. I mean, Pompey, Bernie, looks like a very good defender. Solid gap hitting ability. I don't know how much power you're talking about, but he can at least drive the ball to the gap. Good speed, too. Very good speed for Dalton Pompey. And he's a switch hitter who doesn't really have poor splits on either side. Sometimes guys will switch hit and they're much better from one side than the other. But it doesn't look like Dalton Pompey is a player who's going to have to be platooned at the big league level.
Yeah, I think he's a center fielder in the making there for the Blue Jays. I do think left or center are fine. A little bit short on power, but the speed plays, and it plays very well. His instincts, his baseball instincts are good. This is a guy that could hit at the top of the order in the two-hole, set the table, steal some bases without a doubt. In the outfield, closes quickly on balls, which I like. With that speed, takes good routes. He's very close to ready, DVR, and they need him.
Makes me wonder if they will pursue a veteran to play center field to begin the year or if they'll just give Pompey the opening day job. And this is a guy that started 2014 in the Florida State League at High A and finished in Toronto over four different levels, 44 of 51 as a base dealer. So not only is he fast, but he actually has good instincts as a base dealer. He's not getting caught 20 or 25% of the time.
Yeah, and see, I think that's what they need. They need to change their game up and set the table for Bautista and Encarnacion. Lind is gone. So they are making some changes. And we're going to talk about them a little bit more later in this cast. But I'll tell you, I think Pompey is very close to ready. Let's talk about Steven Moya for the Tigers. Also saw time at the big league level. I would not be surprised if he saw lots of time in Detroit in 2016, especially against right-handed pitching. Long and lean, big long legs, but boy, can he put a charge in the ball from the left-handed batter's box. Scuffles much more against lefties, though.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a guy who's maybe ever going to hit left-handed pitching, but if he can mash righties, it's going to be valuable to fantasy owners and to the Tigers. They do have some issues. Torrey Hunter, a free agent, that opens up a spot. With Victor Martinez, a free agent, maybe there's some DH at-bats to go around, so it doesn't seem like Moya's too far away. I would say the biggest concern I have about Moya is that as a professional player, he now has a 295 on base percentage overall. That's not just against lefties. That's combined lefties and righties. That gives me some serious pause with Steven Moya.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Again, looking at the team, they need him. Those losses, if they do lose Martinez, and I'm not sure they will, I think they're going to lose Torrey Hunter, though. And I think right field could be a vast wasteland for them. And this is a guy that could fill that hole, if not at the beginning, later in the season, again, against right-handed pitching. So we have to watch Moya very carefully because he certainly has the power. He's a great wrist hitter. This is a guy who can barrel the ball right over the bag at second base. I really like this kid.
Bernie, I saw a lot of Eddie Rosario, and I may have expressed it last week, but the more I've thought about that swing, and I was looking at some video of it too, his swing gives me major concerns. Like I wonder if against high-quality big league pitching, if this guy's going to struggle. All he's done is hit in the fall league. He's been great since the start of October, but I don't know if he can actually maintain that against high-quality fastballs in the upper part of the strike zone. What have you seen from Eddie Rosario? Does that swing bother you at all, or do you think he's going to be just fine as he moves up further in the Twins system?
Yeah, it does bother me, Derek, and I think we talked about it a little bit in the press box. He is leading the league. He's leading the fall league in hitting. And what does that say to me? It says he's getting a lot of fastballs and some breaking balls, and he's out front on those pitches. He's pulling a lot of pitches. And I do think if he lays off the high fastball, he'll be fine. But he's going to have to get that swing a little bit corrected. But that's because there's a lot of motion in it, and it takes time. But this is what I've learned about hitting over the years, Derek. You might be able to tinker with a pitcher's mechanics, but when you mess around with a hitter's mechanics, it just doesn't work. You know, hitters go up there and they do what's natural to them, and you can throw them off terribly by messing with their mechanics. Now, the thing that if I'm a hitting coach, I say, go look at film when you're going well. Go look at video from when you're going well and look at how you're swinging. And maybe you can move the hands a little bit or move the feet up or, you know, look at the stride. But the swing is something this kid has been doing since he's held a bat in his hands. So Rosario gives me a little pause, but he's a much better outfielder than I thought he was. I saw him close on a ball. It was sparkling. You know, this guy has got to make this club. He will be on the Twins in 2016. I don't see how they can avoid it.
Let's talk about Corey Seager just for a little bit here, Bernie. I saw a statement from Andrew Friedman recently, the new president of baseball operations for the Dodgers. Friedman insisted that Corey Seager, for now, will remain at shortstop. And thus far in development, I mean, the Dodgers haven't even tinkered with him. He's played exactly one professional game at third base, predominantly shortstop and DH, otherwise to this point in his development. Defensively, though, again, this is a guy who's 6'4". No one's questioning the bat. At least I haven't seen or heard anyone questioning the bat. But defensively, do you really think he can stick at short, or do you think he's inevitably going to third base within the next year?
I think he's got another inch of growth in him, Derek. I think he's going to be 6'5". And I don't think he's going to stick it short. I think he's a better fit at third base. I saw him hit the ball out of the park this week. Seager is not hitting well this spring in terms of average, I don't believe. But overall, he will hit. And overall, he's an extremely good prospect. I don't think they want to move him off a shortstop because they've got a huge hole there. But they also have one at third base. So let's see what happens. Let's see if he grows anymore, if he fills out anymore, if he gets bigger or slower. Those are all issues that he's going to have to deal with because he is so young. I don't have his age right in front of me right now. Maybe I do. I'll look that up.
He's young. I mean, he's 20 or 21, so he's got plenty of time to figure out the last stages of hitting. I mean, 24.2% strikeout rate between high A and double A in 2014 is a tick high. So I think he's still probably a full year away. There's some out there that wanted to speculate on Seager possibly replacing Hanley Ramirez as the Dodgers shortstop. I just don't think that's going to happen in 2015. I think they're going to have to wait a year to actually let that materialize. Maybe in the second half, if he was mashing in the minor leagues, I could see him maybe up in June or July, but I wouldn't bank on it.
He was born in April of 94.
So he's 20.
That's right. And I think there's another inch of growth there, Derek. I really do. Especially in body depth. I think that's going to happen. And I think you have to worry about that a little. Played at Chattanooga, double A already. So, they've got him on the fast track. There's no doubt about it. But we have to watch with this guy. I think ultimately, as a third baseman, but I'm not the general manager, I think he'll hit no matter where he plays.
A few other hitters and position players that stood out to me. I mean, Raul Mondesi defensively just looks so good at shortstop. Offensively, I don't know what you're going to get in the long run from him. I think he's extremely volatile in terms of what he might do. There's a lot there. He switch hits. He could become very good. I mean, he's been very young for his competition everywhere he's played. He was 18 years old for most of the year at High A Wilmington. So you do have to grade him on a curve just given where he's played to this point.
He's fast. I'll tell you, the speed is definitely there. He's less than four home to first. And in one of the reads that I've got to see more of him at the plate. I think he's a little undisciplined. The youth is showing. That's all I can say. He's nowhere near ready. Although, you know, these are guys that they get excited about. He played in advanced class A. He'll be in double A this year, I'm sure. And I think Mondesi is a guy that they're excited about. For good reason.
Definitely seems to be the case, although with Elcides Escobar, they don't have to rush Mondesi too much. Now, Mondesi was 17 for 21 at High A in stolen base attempts, despite having a .256 on-base percentage. A lot of work to be done still at the plate.
He's impatient.
But an outstanding defender. I mean, the glove will carry him a very long way. Daniel Robertson, I think we've talked about at some points earlier the last couple of weeks. I think he looks pretty good at short. I mean, he was making plays at the backhand side. Has enough arm to play there. We'll see if the A's keep him there in the long run. But without Addison Russell, it seems like Robertson has a pretty clear path to locking down that the mantle of shortstop of the future for Oakland. Greg Bird's a guy we talked about last week coming off the Fall Stars game. He was one of the better hitters that I saw. Patrick Leonard, I thought, looked pretty good. We saw a two-homer game from him in surprise last week.
He is huge, DVR. This is a big, big guy. I wrote about him the first week I saw him in the Fall League because he had such a good swing for a big guy. Patrick Leonard is a guy that you've got to remember because this is a guy that's going to hit some home runs. Plays for Tampa Bay, plays first base. I'm looking here. He's 6'4", 225. I think he's actually bigger than that.
He's pretty athletic, though. We saw him making some plays at first base in that very same game in surprise. And, I mean, this is a guy who was playing third base prior to this season. So the fact that he kept growing probably moved him across the diamond. And, again, Patrick Leonard's a player who was included as part of that Rays deal with the Royals, the James Shields, Will Myers blockbuster. I would expect Leonard's going to spend 2015 at AA Montgomery, but he may not be too far away from helping the Rays. Maybe 2016 is a possibility. They bring their prospects along very slowly. Leonard was a guy that was drafted out of high school in Texas. He was a fifth-round pick. So it could still be two full years before they give him an everyday job, but I would imagine at least one more year of minor league development before he gets that first taste of the big leagues.
I want to give you one more guy, DVR, before we go on to the next topic, because this is your guy from Milwaukee. Tyrone Taylor, we haven't talked about him. He had a four-hit game yesterday. I've seen this hit tool in him. I've seen him in the outfield play very well. This is a guy that's starting to excite me a little. He's probably their best overall prospect.
Yeah, I think right now the system's a little bit young. Definitely skews very young. The 2014 draft class in particular is one that I know the Brewers are pretty excited about Cody Medeiros and Monty Harrison and Jacob Gatewood, but Tyrone Taylor is probably their most advanced hitting prospect. I would definitely buy into that. I saw him. He's pretty small. I wonder if there's anything tools-wise that's overwhelming, similar to Nimmo in that regard, not necessarily in the way he plays, but in terms of what I expect him to do. I don't know if I see anything more than an everyday player who might contribute just a little bit in every category.
He's 6 feet. He's 185 pounds, probably a little bit less than that now because he's played, you know, a month and a half more and you lose a little weight in this weather. I see him as an everyday player, not a lot of power, but, a good batting average. That's what I'm looking at from him.
The last hitter I had on my list that I wanted to bring up was Dan Vogelbosch, and the problem for Vogelbosch is that he doesn't have anywhere to play. on the north side of Chicago. I mean, Anthony Rizzo's the first baseman now, tomorrow, and the day after that. It's one of the spots on that Cubs roster right now that's pretty firmly secured. And Vogelbach can't play the outfield. There's no DH spot in the National League. I mean, he looks like a trade piece to me, but the question is, how much power can he display in game situations? I think he's got 25 to 30 home run power. There's just a lot there otherwise that you don't necessarily like. The body type is less than ideal, to put it nicely, and I just wonder, can he actually land in a place where he'll see 450 or 500 at-bats a year or two from now at the big league level?
There are teams that need first baseman. There, that clearly is a position of need. Let's look around. You know, even Oakland, Brandon Moss is there. How good is he going to be after the surgery? A guy like Vogelbach could fit there. But there's others. Now, the thing about him that I like is that he can take the pitch to the opposite field. He isn't a dead pull hitter. The weight is an issue, although he's, you know, he's trimmed down a little. He's very agile at first base. You would never know he's as huge as he is because he does have a lot of agility. He's a good defender. Do not discount his defense. And I do like him. I do like what happens to the ball when it hits the barrel of his bat. Somebody out there needs him. And I think that's why he's here. I think he is on showcase here for the Cubs to get an offer.
Looking at the spray chart, Dan Vogelbach hit, I think, 15 home runs over the course of 2014, at least at the time I generated the spray chart. Four were opposite field to left.
That's what I saw, yeah.
Three of them were straight away to center field, and the other eight were pulled. But, yeah, he hits the ball all over the place. You know, if you think about the body type, the fact that he's more athletic than people want to give him credit for, he's not a good runner. Make no mistake about that. He's bottom of the scale in terms of his running ability, but he can actually play first base. It reminds me a little bit of Prince Fielder in the way we're talking about him. Now, I don't think he's going to hit as much as Prince. I don't see 50 home run seasons coming from Dan Vogelbach, but sometimes you have to look at a player and take what he's able to do, even though he lacks the typical athleticism or physical tools you'd be looking for. I mean, power plays, like, and there's not a lot of power to go around right now. He may just be better than people expect just because it's easy to write him off when you look at the body type.
There's no doubt about it. I've seen that body type play, and the issue is he will be a base clogger. I've seen it game after game here. I mean, he cannot score from first, for example. There's no way on a drive to the deepest gap in right center field he will end up at third base. That's a shame. And he may keep somebody else from scoring as well. But given everything else he brings, there are clubs out there that could definitely use a first baseman like Dan Vogelbach.
Yeah, just an example of that speed. We saw it. There was a two-out double. He was on first base, and he ended up at third. He went first to third on a two-out double.
That's right.
I mean, that's right. Shouldn't happen ever, but he would have been out at the plate if he had run. So at least in that case, he didn't make an extra out. But we'll see if he's able to maybe shed a little bit more weight. I know when he was drafted, he was actually heavier than he is now. So perhaps he's trending in the right direction. Let's talk about awards, Bernie. It's award season each day. It seems like we've got a few new awards coming from the Baseball Writers Association. Let's start with the Rookie of the Year awards. Jose Abreu gets the American League Rookie of the Year. Given that Cuban and Japanese players and guys that sign from anywhere else in the world to come play in the big leagues are eligible for the Rookie of the Year award, to me, he was a lock to win in the AL.
What a tremendous season. You know, he did tail off a bit at the end, and I think there was a bit of fatigue, A, and B, I do think pitchers adjusted to him, but he's smart enough to adjust back. This is a guy that's going to be an awesome presence in that lineup for years to come, and the fact that he can hit line drives as well as get loft on the ball and carry the ball over the fence, very exciting player, no doubt about it. Tremendous pitch recognition. That's what I like, DVR. He is not going to get himself out. He recognizes pitches very well, and he's a mature hitter.
Do you think with Abreu that there was some fatigue potentially in the second half of the season? It seemed like his numbers, even though the average went way up in the second half, the power went down significantly. I mean, he had 36 home runs this year, but he only hit 7 over the final 63 games. So after the All-Star break, the power really dried up. Again, he hit 350 in the second half, so that he was still making a lot of contact. The strikeout rate, I believe, was actually down after the All-Star break. But how much of that do you think was just the fatigue of a 162-game season?
Oh, I think clearly that was in the mix. I think he did tire, but I also think that he realized how pitchers were pitching to him, realized he couldn't take every pitch out of the park, and took what they gave him. That's a good hitter.
In terms of the power potential, for a guy that hit 29 home runs in 82 games, the immediate question is, can he hit 45 or 50? Is that something he's capable of doing? Because there's only a handful of guys that even have the power necessary to have a season like that.
And I think once he starts to do that, he ruins his game. I think what you saw this year is what you're going to get, because this is not a 20-year-old kid. And I think what you're going to see is 30 to 35 home runs, many of them coming earlier in the season, possibly, and a very good batting average. But the RBIs are going to go up once the White Sox improve their own lineup. Don't forget, this guy did not have a lot of protection in the lineup. There were guys to help him, but they're going to get better and better.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, Abreu's been going, I think, fifth, sixth overall in a lot of the early mocks that I've seen. So no discount at all on Jose Abreu after a very impressive first season, which concluded with the AL Rookie of the Year award. On the National League side, Bernie, it was Jacob DeGrom from the Mets coming away with the hardware. DeGrom is one of those players, if you picked him up in May, he actually went a long way to help you potentially win a fantasy championship. He was one of the guys on my Tout Wars team that definitely made an impact after being a low-cost fab pickup. I mean, for DeGrom, can he still get better? Because the one thing that stood out to me when I did some research about him is that he actually has not been a starting pitcher for very long. He also lost a season of development to Tommy John surgery pretty soon after being drafted by the Mets. It seems like he's still kind of finding his way as a starting pitcher.
And he lost time last season, too, didn't he? He was out for a while.
Yeah, he missed a little bit, yep.
Yeah. You know, the thing about this is he really came out of nowhere. And I have to say that he was not on my radar. And I must have seen him in spring training, but this one I missed. You know, I didn't see this coming. And hats off to the guy. He really is a good pitcher. And he will be a good pitcher this year and will go pretty high. I like him. I just think that Mets pitching staff is going to be outstanding. And let's see what happens. If Harvey comes back, what a combination they will have.
Yeah, they got a lot of rotation depth. There's going to be a trade. I mean, the Mets have so much pitching and a lot of teams are looking for it. The Mets have other positions to address, particularly shortstop, but other spots they could upgrade as well. My question with DeGrom, I mean, the strikeout rate was up over a strikeout per inning. 9.2 strikeouts per nine this season from DeGrom. You don't see that number anywhere in his minor league track record, but when you think about the progression, it becomes more plausible to think that maybe a level close to what he put up in 2014 can be sustained going forward. Are you expecting a reduction in the strikeout rate, though, as hitters get more looks at him here in 2015?
I don't think so. I think what you saw is what you're going to get. This is a guy that's pretty steady. He doesn't have a lot of peaks and valleys in his game that I saw. No, I look for almost an identical season. No sophomore jinx or slump. No, I'm very, very convinced that this is a very steady pitcher.
A lot to like there. I mean, a guy that has pretty good velocity on his fastball, mixes in a slider, a curveball, and a change. Good four-pitch mix for Jacob DeGrom, and certainly a well-earned Rookie of the Year award. In either league, Bernie, was there anybody else who you felt like was strongly deserving of consideration, or do you feel like in both cases it was a relatively easy choice for the voters?
I think if Owings would have stayed healthy, he could have been in the mix because he had a pretty good first half of the year, Chris Owings of the Diamondbacks. I'm not sure there were too many other guys.
I was trying to figure it out. I mean, Billy Hamilton, I think, was still eligible for the award, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't look at the final voting tallies, but what did Hamilton have to do to win the award? Did it have to be a higher on base percentage? I mean, he's a good defender. He stole a lot of bases. What do you think it was that kept Hamilton from winning?
I don't think you think about Billy Hamilton's hit tool. I think he is a one-trick pony in people's minds. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But if you're a writer and you think Billy Hamilton, the first thing you think of is, well, you know what? This guy can steal bases. We used to say that about colleges. You know, you think of Notre Dame. What do you think of? Football. They're a very good academic institution. But sometimes institutions or individuals get tagged, and you look at Hamilton and you say, stolen bases. But you know what? He did get on base. And he did much better than I thought he was going to do playing center field.
And Colton Wong, by the way, was the other candidate.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Right.
Well, I mean, Wong got sent down, but when he came back, I want to say it was in June I think it was June, he came back from that demotion to AAA. He was a completely different player. I mean, he was better than anybody would have expected, I think, even with an optimistic projection going into the season.
He exceeded my expectations. I was never on Colton Wong, and now people are talking about him in glowing terms. I mean, I've read some articles recently about Colton Wong, and I'm saying, is this the guy that I saw before he made it to the big leagues? Because, you know, he was a dump hitter. He would dump the ball into center field, dump the ball into right field. Not a lot of line drive in him, but boy, he has really improved.
Yeah, I think the results this season, .249 average, .292 on base, .388 slugging. That made it easier to go with a pitcher in Jacob deGrom. And deGrom, again, a great story, a guy that came out of relative nowhere for 2014. I didn't hear anybody say a word about him going into last year as a reserve pick or a flyer. I don't think he was targeted in NL Labor or Tau, any of those deep leagues that I know about. I mean, there was nothing like that. Let's talk about a couple other awards that have been handed out. The AL and NL Managers of the Year. I believe it was Matt Williams in the National League who got the award, and Buck Showalter in the AL?
That is correct. And, you know, there's a lot of people who felt if this award could be voted on after the playoffs. I think they're done before the playoffs. People were not happy with the way Williams handled his club in the playoffs. Well, you know what? He did a great job during the year. The time that he, got all over Harper for not running out a dribbler. People were upset about that because Harper was injured. But you know what? Williams is a fiery guy, and he's gonna manage that way. I think he deserved it. I think he's a darn good manager.
I think Buck Showalter definitely deserved the award on the AL side. This guy is just been, I think, underrated. I mean, this franchise as a whole, getting some recognition this offseason. I know Dan Duquette won, I think it was Executive of the Year. That award came out in the last couple of days. And the Orioles as a team just had so much balance. I mean, they hit on Nelson Cruz. Their pitching was good top to bottom, even with Ubaldo Jimenez trying his best to crater that rotation. Top to bottom, that was a team that I think was better than everybody gave him credit for all season long.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Showalter really makes things happen. He knows how to manage. I trust him. I like Baltimore all along only because, you know, he knows how to blend those parts. And you take a Nelson Cruz and you put him in that lineup, and it made all the difference in the world. And they're trying to get him back. They offered him a 3-year deal, and he has not accepted it yet. So let's see what happens. If they lose Nelson Cruz, which I don't think they will, I think it's going to be a big, big change.
Bernie, let's talk about the offseason as a whole here and looking at 2015 and what it might mean for a couple of different general managers. In your opinion, which general manager or which general managers have to have a great offseason in order to kind of rebuild their team for the 2015 season and ultimately secure their own jobs?
Well, I'm going to start with the Toronto Blue Jays. I really feel that this is a franchise that has spent an awful lot of money in their scouting department. They really have not met expectations. They have money to spend with the Rogers ownership. I think that Alex Anthopoulos is, you know, may not be on the hot seat, but I think he's got to be creative and try to help those big sluggers with some other parts, but the pitching is what they have to change. They have got to get an ace or an ace and a half, if you will, and they've got to go back on the map because that East is not the old East. The East now in the American League is winnable, and the Orioles proved that. The Yankees and Red Sox are still scuffling a bit. Now is the time for Toronto to come around.
Yeah, it seemed like the window was theirs, and Baltimore jumped in instead. But I'm with you. I think Alex Anthopoulos needs to go ahead and make a couple of big moves, and this needs to be a good year for Toronto because I think otherwise he could reasonably be on the hot seat depending on what happens in 2015 and the types of moves they have to make. Obviously, we talked about Dalton Pompey maybe taking over in center field, but they're going to need help in left field, whether that's re-signing Melky Cabrera or going a different direction. I don't know. Second base was a problem last year when Macer's Turris got hurt. Maybe they try to upgrade that spot anyway, even with this Turris apparently healthy or closer to being healthy in spring training. They traded for Justin Smoke because I guess they want Edwin Encarnacion to DH. I hope that works out for their sake because Smoke, for me, is a guy I'm finally giving up on. I'm more excited about him in Toronto, given that he's out of Seattle. Much better place to hit. But other than rolling the dice on him as a late-round dart, I'm not confident that Justin Smoke is going to start to mash now that he's with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I've been burnt three times too, and I'm done. But apparently the Blue Jays are not done. So let's see what happens with Smoke there. I think they've given up some. I like Lynn better than Smoke, frankly, but that's their decision. But it's all going to come down to pitching. If they can't pitch, they can't win.
I'm concerned about the Reds offseason. I mean, if you're Walt Jocketty, the GM of the Reds right now, the Cardinals are the Cardinals. The Pirates are strong, and their farm system is there to support what they've built at the big league level. I think Milwaukee has more talent on their 25-man roster than the Reds do right now. And the Cubs are loading up to be primed for a run of maybe a decade near the top of the division. If you're the Reds, you're the fifth team in that division right now. I mean, that's just what you are. You've got to find a way to do a couple things this offseason that take an opportunity now before the Cubs reach that peak and actually still be competitive. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble. I don't think the Reds have a great farm system. They've got a couple nice prospects. We talked about Jesse Winker. Robert Stevenson's a pitching prospect a lot of people like. So they have a couple.
Overrated for me.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people now too, though, where there's some concern about Stevenson's long-term future as a potential frontline starter. He might not be that guy. The depth really isn't there. That's where the Reds are really lacking. Even if they have a couple nice prospects at the top, they don't have a deep farm system. That, to me, looks like a problem. And the Brewers and the Reds are in a similar boat where they are rebuilding at the minor league level. I think Milwaukee's a little further along in that process. But if Walt Jocketty doesn't go out and either decide to sell players like Johnny Cueto and get a lot of young talent back in return, or kind of go all in and try to win now, he's going to get caught in the middle.
Well, two things here. I think Kevin Towers is going to go over there and work with Jocketty. And, you know, they could be riverboat gamblers this offseason. They've got they're going to lose Ryan Ludwig. Their outfield concerns me. Their ability to hit, you know, other than Jay Bruce, who is inconsistent at best. Joey Votto is always going to be a question mark for me. Always has been and always will be. Second base, you know the situation there with Phillips. Shortstop, Cozart has never hit the way we thought he was going to hit. Frazier's good. You know, I think we have to worry about the long-term future of the Reds because of the lack of depth. Their strength is their starting pitching. But, boy, when Chapman's a free agent, watch out. You know, they could lose him too.
Yeah, it's got all the makings of a potential rebuild a year or two from now. So this offseason is crucial just to determine the short-term direction of the Reds. So I'm curious to see what Walt Jocketty and company do there. Let's talk about some of the happenings from the last couple days here, Bernie. The big surprise, Michael Kadire lands with the Mets, gets a two-year deal. I want to say it was a $21 million contract, and Kadire had been extended a qualifying offer from the Rockies. He could have stayed in Colorado on a one-year deal for $15.3 million. Instead, he leaves the hitter-friendly confines of Coors. I heard something or read something about Kadire being close with David Wright, so maybe that led to the decision to leave Colorado and join the Mets. What do you think Kadire brings when you account for his bat outside of Coors Field?
An inability to stay on the field for 150 games and a frustration level when the ball doesn't go out of the park, and I think he brings a bigger paycheck to the bank. I really scratch my head about this. I say to myself, first of all, hats off to the Rockies for knowing this could have been in the works and extending him that offer. 15.3 for 1 year for Michael Kadire, who's been hurt for 2 years. They did it. And now they're winners because they get a draft pick between the first and the second round. And the Mets lose, I think it was their 15th. They were 15th. They lose that. So good luck with Kadire in New York. He did himself well. He got a two-year deal where he would have had one. But it still makes me wonder what the Mets are thinking, getting an older guy like that versus going for younger guys and making that trade for the shortstop, which they really need. Kadire could probably play a little bit of first base, too, in addition to the outfield.
Yeah, if needed. But I feel like Lucas Duda's got first base pretty much locked down at this point, and they really don't like playing Duda in the outfield. Kadire's going to be 36 in March. So you get his age 36 and 37 seasons, paying $10.5 million per year. That just seems silly. In today's baseball economy, it's not as bad as it would have been 10 years ago, but I didn't see the reasoning behind it, especially when you consider the loss of that 15th overall pick. I mean, this is an organization that, because of the pitching it has, and I didn't think they were that far away anyway. I just don't think Kadire's the type of guy that puts them over the top. I mean, we're talking a guy that's probably going to give you a 750, maybe a 775 OPS when you remove the Coors. Look at the last 3 years. His numbers outside of Colorado weren't bad, but keep factoring in the regression with age, factor in that, you know, Citi Field's not an easy place to hit, and that he's not playing half his games at Coors. Totally different player at this point. I don't know why they acted so quickly to go out there and sign Michael Kadire.
Derek, I have to look at two things here. Two things. Number one, does Michael Kadire equate to a 15-round, number 15 overall pick? That's question one. For me, the answer is no, but that's just me. Secondly, is he a $10 million a year baseball player? Or could I take that $10 million somewhere else and get as much, if not more? And apparently they think it's a value. So more power to them. I could be wrong about this, but I was stunned. I literally was stunned. First of all, that he got the qualifier, and second of all, that he refused it and got a two-year deal. And that's baseball.
Yeah, no player has ever accepted a qualifying offer. I believe that's correct. The third season now that we've had this. And it replaced the old Type A, Type B free agent compensation system, which was a mess to handle. I mean, it was, you knew going into it what you'd give up for a player, but throughout the year, you had to go through this exercise of trying to project what a player you were going to lose might be graded as, because it was a formula that graded players at compared to other players, their position, and whether they were the top part of that group, they'd be A, or the next part, they'd be B. That's what determined how much compensation the team who lost the player would get. This system seems a lot easier. I mean, you have a chance to retain the player at a reasonable price. I think the players' union is telling players, do not take the qualifying offer. Absolutely do not take it. If you can go to free agency and get a multi-year deal and get more money guaranteed over time, I mean, $21 million guaranteed is better than $15.3 million guaranteed. And Michael Kadire, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, if he stays in Colorado and he bets on his own health, he probably gets more than a one-year, $6 million contract next year if he stays healthy. But he knows he's 36 years old, and staying healthy probably isn't anywhere near as easy as it was for him 10 years ago. So qualifying offers, to me, they're pretty interesting. They're better than Type A, Type B. But I'm not surprised that players keep turning them down. I just thought Kadire was surprising to have received one in the first place. Now, most of the players who were offered a qualifying offer, Bernie, we knew they weren't even close to accepting it, right? I mean, Max Scherzer, Victor Martinez, Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, and James Shields especially. Those guys were not going to take a qualifying offer. But even like Melky and Russell Martin, Liriano, Nelson Cruz, Irvin Santana.
Stop there. Irvin Santana.
That's where it becomes questionable, right? Irvin Santana and David Robertson. Those are the two guys that I thought they might actually take $15.3 million guaranteed, but they didn't. And Santana, it took a long time for him to sign last offseason before he got that deal with the Braves.
And didn't he get burnt? Didn't he lose money?
Well, he's going to get it now depends on what happens this year. Because he didn't get hurt, if he gets the multi-year deal now, he actually comes out ahead because he'll probably end up with one more year than he ever would have got last year.
We're talking 15.3 DVR, okay? So he has to get that two-year $30 million deal, right?
I think 2 and 25 is still a similar type deal because you're
but that gives him only 10 in the second year, and he could have qualified again.
But you have to factor in the possibility of getting hurt. I mean, that has to be built
I guess. Or you factor in the possibility that nobody's going to give you 25.
Right. I mean,
because I sat out there all winter last year.
It's strange to me. I thought he would take it. I thought David Robertson would take it. I know closers, you don't get many chances to hit free agency and get a multi-year deal. But if David Robertson stays healthy this year, $15.3 million would make him the highest paid reliever in baseball easily.
So what, you know, is somebody going to give him 25 for two as a reliever? As a closer, which we see that door open and close all the time, they lose their jobs all the time. The security is not there. You know, I was shocked at that. I have to say, those two guys give me pause. And I don't know how quick. I could be totally wrong. Maybe people are so desperate for a closer, they'll go 25, 30 for two. I don't know.
I think if he gets $30 million, it's over 3 years. I mean, I think that's more likely, but I feel like 3 years is as much as any team's going to give a reliever at this point. So maybe it's 3 for 27. And again, if you're a reliever, I mean, I think taking the chance on the long-term deal is I can rationalize it, but I would have taken the 15.3 up front. Yeah. I just said, you know what? Hopefully I stay healthy because I'll play this game all day long. I'll be the highest paid reliever in baseball every year as long as my arm holds up. 15.3 is a lot of money. And that's a ton of money, especially for a reliever who may only get 20, 25. I think 30 is possible.
Exactly.
All right, so let's look at these guys who are available, the qualifying offer free agents, and just quickly kind of think about where we expect them to go. We'll start with Max Scherzer. Where do you think he's most likely to land?
I say either the Dodgers or the Yankees, people that have the deep pockets, that, or maybe Boston. Those three clubs come to mind. I don't see him going back to Detroit. I just think that ship has sailed, and I think he's gone. How about you?
I think he's definitely gone from the Tigers because they traded for David Price. He's still Price under contract for another year. I don't think they can make the pieces fit with Scherzer. They've got Verlander's long-term contract on the books. They already made their offer to Scherzer. He shot it down. I think you're right. That ship has sailed. I think it hinges on John Lester. And John Lester did not get a qualifying offer because players traded mid-season cannot give their team compensation. They're blocked from extending a qualifying offer. So the A's didn't even have the option. Otherwise, the A's would have offered John Lester the $15.3 million, and he would have turned it down. But anyway, that's a little wrinkle in the rules. I think Lester's landing place may actually depend on where Scherzer goes, or vice versa, depending on which one signs first. I'm not convinced the highest-paid guy actually goes first. I think Scherzer might get a bigger deal. But if Lester goes to the Cubs, I think Scherzer goes to the Red Sox. If Lester goes back to the Red Sox, I think Scherzer goes to the Cubs.
I still want to see if the Cubs are going to spend that kind of money. I just don't think that's in the owner's DNA. It's going to surprise me if he spends that kind of money. If he does, then they have turned the page, have done what the plan was to do, and that is to add the money to the payroll when they got closer. They're closer. Let's see if they add the money to the payroll. I don't believe it yet. I will be the first to say I believe it when it happens.
Let's talk about Victor Martinez.
I think it's Lester more than Scherzer for less money.
Yeah, I think Lester is more likely to go to the Cubs, and the Red Sox are likely to just say, fine, we'll spend the money on Scherzer. But I could see either one landing in either one of those places. I feel like those are the two teams where those two players are going to go. MLB split. They won't end up in the same place. Victor Martinez, where do you think he actually ends up when it's all said and done? I think he's going back to Detroit.
I do, too. I think he is going back to Detroit. I think they're in serious trouble if Victor goes anywhere else. I think Dave Dombrowski is well aware of that. I think ownership there has been wonderful to their GM. I think they will pony up for Martinez. The question now is for how long? And that's a serious issue because he's not getting any younger. But, man, can that guy hit. The home run stroke was there. No strikeouts, home runs, average. You know, here's the check. Fill in the numbers.
Would you, at his age, and Victor Martinez will turn, I believe, 36 in December, would you give him 3 years at something in the neighborhood of 40, maybe $45 million to be your DH from age 36 through age 38?
I don't have a money gene DVR. That's not my strength. I'd give him 3 years, but I'd front load it. So at the back end, he'd make less than at the front. And then if I had to move him, it would be easier. But I do think he can sustain for 3 years. The money, if it's, I don't know how much it is per year. That's not my strength.
I feel like it'll be a decent amount, but by letting Scherzer go, it's going to open some things up on the payroll for Martinez to be retained. What about Hanley Ramirez? I've heard Seattle as a place, and I'm just not sure if I fully buy into that. Where do you think Hanley ends up?
I wouldn't doubt that he ends up at Seattle or to play with Cano at second base. I think that's a real possibility. And I think that Seattle feels that they are one or two players away from the promised land. And I don't think Hanley Ramirez is the guy. However, they may think that, and they might want to pair him with Cano. That is a very good landing spot for him. Also, I wouldn't doubt the New York Yankees. I don't doubt the Yankees on anything now. I think they've been embarrassed by not being at the front of the class, and they're going to spend money again.
No, I get the feeling Hanley's going to the Yankees, too. That's where I see him. But Seattle, I see Seattle being willing to spend a ton for him and just be the highest bidder, kind of like they were with Cano, where you're kind of surprised by it. But I hope for their sake that's not the move they make. I just don't think that's the best long-term direction for their franchise. How about Melky Cabrera, right back to Toronto or somewhere else?
I think he did well in Toronto, and I think he'll stay in Toronto. I don't think he wants to rock the boat too much in his life right now, and I think they have the money to pay him. He hit well there, better than I thought he would. I think he stays put.
Yeah, unless he wants to get off the AstroTurf or something, I would imagine he probably stays with Toronto, and they should have the money to re-up with him too, so that shouldn't be a factor.
Yes.
This next one's a little bit more tricky for me. Russell Martin, where does he go? I've heard 4-5 year deals for $70 million for Russell Martin. I'm not getting anywhere near that contract if I'm a GM, but who do you think is willing to pay the premium for Russell Martin?
It's not Pittsburgh, not at those dollars. And I saw a catcher for Pittsburgh that I really like, and I think I talked about him before. His name is Elias Diaz, and I don't know that he's ready, but he's close. So I don't know that Pittsburgh ponies up for that.
Yeah,
I have no idea where Martin goes, to tell you the truth. It might be the Dodgers.
Back to the Dodgers. That's possible.
Might be.
The money, doesn't matter. I mean, they have as much as ever need. I'm trying to think about teams that would actually pay him. Would Boston do that? I think they like Christian Vasquez a lot, so I don't see Boston being players.
I heard they are in on Miguel Montero, too.
I don't think the White Sox would spend money on Martin. I think they have other needs they would address. And looking around here, I just don't see that many teams that have an overwhelming need behind the plate willing to spend. Maybe you're right. Maybe a reunion with the Dodgers is in order. The Angels aren't going to spend big money. The Marlins won't be there. The Twins aren't going to spend that much for him. Yeah, it's a short list of places where he actually can go, because a lot of teams do have long-term solutions at the position, and many others just simply can't afford a player like that. So he may end up getting a lot less money than he's hoping for. What about a place
if
like...
If it's 2 years, everybody's in play if it's 2 years. If it's 4 years or 5 years, no. Very few players for that.
What about a team like Texas?
I don't know. I think they have their eyes on bigger prizes than Russell Martin.
Yeah.
I don't think everybody views Russell Martin in the same light that Pittsburgh does, as we've got to keep this guy if we can. I'm not sure he's seen like that. Yes, he's a very good handler of pitchers, but he's not, you know, he's not getting any younger. Like I said, 2 years opens the door to everybody. 3 years, now you're starting to scratch your head. 4 years, that's the Dodgers.
Let's run through a few more of these as we close things out. We'll try to go rapid fire on the last few. Francisco Liriano.
I think he stays right where he was in Pittsburgh. I think that's the guy they spend their money on.
I agree. I think they'll actually get a reasonable price on him, too, because of the injury history. Maybe they go with some kind of incentive-laden contract to help make it worth his while. But Liriano seems pretty stable.
My other choice for him is Toronto.
That's interesting. I could see that possibly materializing. But I just feel like he's going back to Pittsburgh. Pablo Sandoval, staying in San Francisco?
Right back to the Giants.
I agree. They have no solution if he leaves. Like they're gonna have to pay a lot because they have nothing on their side as far as alternatives to play third base, but I think you're right. I think he stays with the Giants. How about James Shields?
I'm looking at the Yankees for Shields. I'm looking at the Red Sox for Shields. I'm looking at Toronto for Shields. And I'm looking at the Dodgers for Shields, those four franchises.
I could see the Rangers probably getting in on Shields. I think they're one pitcher short right now. Maybe they'd go after
him.
Yeah,
that's a good call. That's a possibility. I'm not sure he'll go there.
Not a great fit for the park.
That's too hitter-friendly.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would be interested in him, but he may not want to go there given the alternatives. I think the Yankees would be a great spot for him, too, just as one that he's familiar with the AL East. I think they would like that about him. I don't know how well he could pitch in that park because righty facing lefties at Yankee Stadium can become disastrous, but at least in the early years of that deal, he'd provide them some much-needed stability kind of in the middle or front part of the rotation. How about Nelson Cruz?
Hold on just a minute, DVR. I just want to say this. I think the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, the Dodgers and the Yankees, in that order, are going to be in on pitching. The Red Sox are desperate for starting pitching. They have the money. They've got all their outfielders, all their infielders. They need pitching. They will spend, and you will see one or two pitchers land in Boston. Toronto wants pitching desperately. Free agents are a little bit reluctant to go there because of the taxing structure. It's different, so they would have to make it worth their while, but I think they're going to play. They learned their lesson, and they want to play. And then the Yankees and Dodgers. Those are the teams that I think, but the Red Sox and the Cubs, I forgot the Cubs, but only on a few of the pitchers for the Cubs. Shields, possibly for the Cubs.
Yeah, Shields and I think Lester. Scherzer, I think it's possible. Just depends how close they think they are to winning right now. What about Nelson Cruz, Bernie?
Baltimore. Absolutely Baltimore. He was happy there. They were happy with him. They're gonna have a meeting of the minds. He's going to get 3, 4, 5 years at big, big money.
But Irvin Santana, I feel like he's going to the Jays.
Yeah, I thought that last year. I think he's going somewhere. But I think it's going to take a while again for him. I think his expectations are very, very high. I don't think it's going to be Kansas City or any place like that. No place that doesn't have a lot of money. I think he's going, you know, to the Jays.
Last one here. What about David Robertson? Where do you see him landing?
I would not be surprised if he didn't end up in Detroit. Just a hunch I have. You know, I think they're possibly looking at a guy like Robertson to solve that problem once and for all. And yes, they're paying Nathan a lot of money, but I think they need one more reliever, and Robertson fits there. He fits very well.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which teams will actually go multi-years on a closer. I can't even come up with a good spot for him. I mean, I don't think the Cubs would do it.
Texas might.
Texas could if they're not comfortable with Felice, but I think they would just use Felice. It helps them. They need bullpen help, so maybe they do make sense in that regard. I'm trying to imagine if they would actually pay a premium for a reliever like that. So I think Robertson's one of the trickier ones. I could see him going right back to the Yankees, even though they've got Betances and they have the luxury of just going with Betances in the ninth. They don't have a lot of depth in that bullpen in the Bronx either.
Yeah, he's a tougher one for me. He's another one that could fit, you know, in Toronto. Those places that I've mentioned are good fits for any pitcher. You know, I the Dodgers are another one as a setup guy. You know, they faltered. They have no problems with their closer, but as a setup guy, the Dodgers could use him desperately.
I agree. The money is no object factor also works very well. And this is it's an organization that's been burned by relievers in the past, but at the same time, different guys calling the shots now than in the last couple of years when Brandon League and Chris Perez and Brian Wilson were signed by Ned Colletti. Bernie, as we wrap things up here, what's coming up this week or this weekend at MLB Pipeline and Bernie's Baseball World?
Well, we have the championship game on Saturday for the Fall League, and I'll be doing a piece on that on Saturday. And I'll also have three profiles next week on MLBPipeline.com. And next week with you, Jerick, I'd like to talk about guys who left the Fall League that we haven't talked about, and that's Byron Buxton and Ruzny Castillo, Addison Russell, Taijuan Walker, Kyle Zimmer. We need to talk pitching next week and some of these other guys that we haven't talked about because they're major, major stars in the making.
We will definitely do that next week. It's going to wrap things up for this episode of Short Hops. The views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you're interested in sponsoring this podcast, please contact Shannon at rotowire.com. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Thank you, DVR, and take care. Have a great week, and I hope the weather doesn't bite you.
I'm ready for it. Take care, everybody. Good.